Have you ever stopped to consider the invisible forces shaping nearly every aspect of your daily life, from the coffee in your mug to the device you're listening on?
It's pretty pervasive, isn't it?
It really is. We're talking about capitalism. Today, on The Deep Dive, our mission is to unpack this foundational economic system. You know, what it truly is, how its roots spread through history, the core mechanics that make it tick.
And the fascinating, often fiery debates around its profound impact.
Exactly. We've really dug into our sources to pull out the most important insights for you.
And we didn't just skim the surface. We pulled from a comprehensive Investopedia article, What is Capitalism? History, Pros and Cons versus Socialism, which gives us that essential backbone of definitions and historical context.
Okay.
Then we layered that with key insights from a concise explanatory video transcript. I think it was by Illustrate to Educate on YouTube. It helps simplify some of those denser concepts.
Good combination.
Yeah, together they give us a really well-rounded perspective, I think.
Okay, let's jump right in then. If you boil capitalism down to its absolute essence, what are we really talking about? It's more than just buying and selling, isn't it?
Oh, much more. It's fundamentally about who owns what. At its core, capitalism is an economic system where the means of production, things like factories, land, tools, raw materials, what economists call capital goods, these are privately owned by individuals or corporations.
Okay, private ownership, got it.
And the profits generated from these businesses then go directly to those owners. Workers, on the other hand, contribute their labor and earn wages, but they don't own the productive assets or the products themselves.
And this really stands in stark contrast to other systems, doesn't it? Where, say, the government might decide what gets made and at what price.
Exactly. Unlike a planned economy or, you know, a command economy where the state centrally controls production and prices, capitalism relies on what's called the free market. This means the production of goods and services is determined by supply and demand. It's driven by decentralized, competitive, and voluntary decisions made by millions of individuals and businesses.
So much more bottom-up.
Very much so. It's a very organic, bottom-up approach to economic planning rather than some top-down mandate.
It's rarely pure, though, right? We often hear about pure capitalism, but most countries seem to operate with, well, a mix of different ideas.
You're absolutely right. The theoretical purist form is often called laissez-faire capitalism. It's French. It means let do or let go.
Okay.
That's where private individuals have basically unrestrained freedom to invest, produce, and exchange with virtually no government intervention. But almost every country today, including the U.S., practices what's called mixed capitalism.
And what does that mix involve?
Well, it includes some degree of government regulation, maybe even public ownership of certain industries like utilities or, you know, infrastructure. It's a blend.
So if that's the core of capitalism, how fundamentally does it diverge from the systems that came before it or even other modern approaches like socialism in how it handles economic decisions?
What's truly fascinating, I think, is its reliance on those decentralized, competitive, and voluntary decisions for economic planning rather than centralized political methods. That's a profound shift.
Yeah.
And just to quickly clarify something that often gets conflated.
Okay.
While they often go hand in hand, capitalism, which is the system of economic production, basically who owns the factory and free markets, which are the systems of distribution and allocation, like how prices are set in a store, they are distinct.
Okay. Related, but not the same.
Exactly. They're very much related, but not exactly the same thing.
But how did we even get here? Did capitalism just spring into existence fully formed? Or was it a slow, kind of messy evolution that remade societies?
Oh, definitely a messy evolution. It's a story woven over centuries, beginning, surprisingly, not with grand economic theories, but deep in the feudal countryside of Europe.
Feudalism, right. Yeah. Lords and serfs.
Exactly. Until roughly the 12th century, European society was largely agrarian, dominated by feudalism. Lords owned vast tracts of land, and most people were serfs, tied to that land, working just for subsistence, not wages. Society was rigidly stratified by birth, you know, not by wealth or initiative.
Hard to move up, I imagine.
Very. But by the late Middle Ages, the slow rise of urban centers, towns becoming hubs for industry and trade, that began to change everything. People started migrating to these towns, drawn by the radical idea of earning a wage by working in a factory or for a craftsman.
Wow, yeah. A massive departure from just scraping by.
Huge.
So out of that sort of stagnant feudal system, we saw the gradual emergence of mercantilism. that was, what, 16th to 18th century?
That's right. It dominated Western Europe during that time. This wasn't just local trade anymore. It grew into increasingly broader circles, town to town, then across counties, eventually between nations.
Getting bigger.
And as more nations began offering similar goods, trade became intensely competitive, often fueled by strong feelings of nationalism and the age of colonial expansion.
Right, grabbing resources and markets overseas.
Exactly. Nations were seeking to control distant resources and markets. And it was against this backdrop that Adam Smith, you know, the father of modern economics.
Wealth of Nations.
That's the one. Published in 1776, Smith challenged mercantilism, arguing it was inefficient, led to trade imbalances, limited real wealth creation. His revolutionary ideas for a free market, where individuals pursuing their own self-interest would, through an invisible hand, collectively benefit society. Well, they couldn't have been better timed.
How so?
They aligned perfectly with the nascent stages of the Industrial Revolution, which was just beginning to stir.
And the Industrial Revolution really supercharged things, didn't it?
Absolutely. New wealth poured in from colonial ventures, fueling the expansion and mechanization of production.
Factories popping up everywhere.
And factories, no longer tied to waterways, could now be built in burgeoning cities where thousands of people were available to supply labor. This was a monumental shift.
A whole new class of people.
For the first time, an entirely new class of industrial tycoons began amassing wealth, often far outstripping even the old landed nobles. It fundamentally rewrote the rules of social mobility,
making it possible for common people to actually aspire to wealth through their own enterprise rather than being trapped by birthright. That's huge.
It is. And what's fascinating, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the term capitalism itself gained prominence during this period.
Where did the word come from?
Interestingly, it's derived from the Latin capitalis, which referred to head of cattle as a measure of wealth.
Huh, cattle. Okay.
Yeah. But the term, as we know it, was popularized by a French socialist, Louis Blanc, in 1850. He used it to describe this new system, one defined by the exclusive private ownership of industrial means of production. This era profoundly reorganized society, creating distinct social classes based on who owned capital, not just who owned land.
And this rapid transformation, of course, drew intense scrutiny. People started questioning it.
Definitely. Thinkers like Karl Marx, with his influential work Das Kapital, published in 1867, became a vocal critic.
Right, Marx. What was his main argument?
Marx fundamentally argued that capitalism inherently exploited workers by underpaying them for the value they created, and he predicted it would inevitably concentrate wealth in the hands of a few, leading to its own downfall through class struggle.
Okay, so that gives us the historical arc. But if we strip it all back, what does this mean for how capitalism actually functions on a day-to-day level? You said it boils down to two pivotal concepts that drive the entire system.
That's right. Those are private property rights and the profit motive.
Okay, let's take private property first.
Private property rights are absolutely foundational. Most modern concepts stem from John Locke's idea of homesteading, where you gain ownership by mixing your labor with unclaimed resources.
Makes sense.
These rights are crucial because they incentivize owners to maximize the value of their property. If you own something, you're motivated to invest in it, maintain it, use it efficiently, because its value directly benefits you.
And you need laws to back that up.
Absolutely. To enforce these rights, a capitalist society relies heavily on robust legal frameworks like contracts, fair dealing, and even tort law.
Which is?
Basically the law that deals with civil wrongs and harms. It ensures accountability when property rights are violated.
And when those private property rights aren't clearly defined, you can run into what's famously known as the tragedy of the commons, right?
Precisely. That's a classic economic problem.
Yep.
It arises when common resources, like, say, a shared pasture or fishing ground, are overused and depleted.
Why does that happen?
Because no single individual has an exclusive incentive to conserve or reinvest in them. Everyone has an incentive to extract as much value as possible for themselves without bearing the full cost of upkeep.
Leading to depletion.
Exactly. Privatizing the resource is often proposed as a solution, giving an individual owner a stake in its long-term health.
Okay, so private property gives us ownership and incentive.
Yeah.
But what's the engine that truly drives this whole capitalist machine? What makes it go?
That would be the profit motive, the relentless desire to earn profits from business activity.
Competition.
Exactly. This desire creates an incredibly competitive environment, businesses are constantly striving to be the low-cost producer of a certain good or service to gain market share. Mm-hmm. And if it becomes more profitable to produce something else,
they switch.
They're incentivized to shift their production to meet that new demand. This entire complex dance is coordinated by voluntary trade and the price system, which dynamically balances supply and demand, directing resources to their most efficient and profitable uses.
So the goal is maximum profit through efficiency.
A capitalist essentially makes the highest profit by utilizing capital goods most efficiently to produce the highest value goods or services people want.
And his profit motive, coupled with private property, leads to interesting dynamics regarding the workers' relationship to their labor. There was a striking example from our sources. If a worker in a shoe factory were to take home a pair of shoes that they made, it would be theft.
That's a powerful illustration. It highlights what Marxists in particular refer to as the alienation of workers from their labor.
Alienation? How so?
In a capitalist system, workers don't own the means of production, the factory, the machines, nor do they own the goods they produce. They sell their labor for wages, but the products and the profits belong entirely to the capitalist who owns the means of production. Their effort becomes a commodity, separate from the ultimate value of the product.
Okay, now let's get into the core debates. No economic system is perfect, right? There are strong proponents and equally strong critics. What do advocates point to as capitalism's greatest strengths?
Well, proponents highlight several key advantages. Firstly, capitalism leads to a remarkably efficient allocation of capital resources. Labor and production naturally flow towards where capital and demand are strongest.
Resources go where they're needed most, basically.
Kind of, yeah.
Right.
Where they're most valued by the market. Second, fierce competition among businesses often drives down consumer prices. Companies constantly seek to cut costs, which benefits consumers through mass production and greater accessibility.
Cheaper stuff.
Generally, yes. Third, over historical time, capitalism has led to significant rises in living standards. Wages have generally increased, and more and better goods have become cheaply accessible to broad populations in ways previously unimaginable.
True.
And finally, capitalism is seen as an incredible engine for innovation and invention. The pursuit of success, even the existence of inequality in this view, acts as a powerful spur for economic development. People are incentivized to create and innovate.
But of course, there's another side to that coin, the flip side. What are the significant criticisms often leveled against capitalism?
Critics point to several major disadvantages. They argue capitalism creates inherent class conflict.
The owners versus the workers thing again.
Exactly. Seeing capitalists and labor as fundamentally at odds, with workers potentially exploited for wages that don't fully reflect the value of their work. This often leads to the second major criticism. Enormous wealth disparities and social inequalities. It can create a significant gap between the rich and the poor.
Right.
Thirdly, the relentless pursuit of profit, if unchecked, can incentivize corruption and what's known as crony capitalism.
Where it's not about merit, but connections.
Yeah, where business success depends more on favoritism and overly close relationships between businesses and the state rather than just competition and innovation.
Okay, what else?
Fourth, capitalism can produce negative externalities, like pollution. The costs of that pollution might be borne by society as a whole rather than directly by the producer who caused it.
So the price doesn't reflect the true cost.
Sometimes, yes. And finally, it can be subject to economic cycles of booms and busts. This can lead to instability and uncertainty for individuals and the broader economy.
This raises an important question then. If capitalism tends to benefit capitalists the most and can create these inherent conflicts and downsides, how do societies attempt to manage or mitigate these issues? Because, as you said earlier, it's rare to find any economic system in its purest form in the real world. Most countries operate with a blend of ideas, trying to balance these benefits and drawbacks.
That's absolutely right. If we look at the spectrum of economic systems, you have that laissez-faire capitalism at one extreme, pure private ownership, virtually no government intervention. And at the other end, you have completely planned economies like communism, where the state controls everything.
But most are somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. In reality, nearly every country in the world has what's called a mixed economy. This means they incorporate elements of both central planning and unplanned private business.
So mixed capitalism is where governments play a more active role.
Precisely. They might own some means of production, like public utilities or certain national industries, maybe. But more significantly, they regulate private interests.
How do they regulate?
through things like minimum wage laws, tariffs, taxes, antitrust legislation to prevent monopolies, and even directly operating public goods like roads or national defense.
So it's about respecting private property rights, but placing some limits on them for broader societal goals, trying to manage some of those downsides we just discussed.
Just the idea, yeah. Trying to find a balance. And just to briefly touch on the theoretical extremes again, you have concepts like anarcho-capitalism.
Which is?
It posits a society where all industries, even traditionally public goods like police or courts, are privately owned and operated. Absolutely no central government oversight. It's the ultimate vision of pure, unregulated capitalism. Mm. Pretty theoretical.
Wow. Okay, and this brings us back to the fundamental difference between capitalism and socialism. Mm. You said it's all about ownership and control of the means of production.
Fundamentally, yes. Private ownership in capitalism versus state or collective ownership in socialism.
And they prioritize different things, don't they?
They do. Capitalism tends to prioritize efficiency, innovation, wealth generation. Socialism often aims more for equity, redistribution of wealth, perhaps full employment. Thinkers like Marx even saw socialism as a potential solution to what he viewed as capitalism's inherent social ills.
So different goals, different mechanisms.
Pretty much. And while capitalism, especially in its mixed form with state interventions, remains the dominant global economic system today, it's important to understand why it has achieved that status. Most political theorists and nearly all economists widely argue that when it comes to generating wealth and distributing goods and services efficiently, capitalism is the most productive system of exchange discovered so far.
We've really covered a huge amount of ground today. Mm. Understanding capitalism truly involves grasping its core principles, the private ownership, the profit motive, tracing its fascinating historical evolution from feudalism and mercantilism, exploring its internal mechanisms.
And engaging with that complex, ongoing debate around its profound benefits and significant drawbacks.
Our goal, as always, is to help you, our listener, become truly well-informed on these critical topics.
Absolutely. And maybe building on all we've discussed about capitalism's driving forces, its potential for both immense prosperity and, you know, significant challenges. A question for you to think about is, what aspects of the system do you observe most clearly in your daily life? And how might that observation maybe change your perspective on how our world works?
That's a great thought to leave people with. We want to thank you for listening, and we also want to thank PlatformFundingGroup.com for sponsoring this educational podcast.